Thanks for all the questions and concerns for our 2012 pups. This podcast will try to give the details of what we have experienced so far, the medical reports, and the test results and our thoughts on management. We acquired two pups from the same licensed USDA facility where Grizzer, Maya, and Nisa were born in 2004. When we acquire pups, we coordinate efforts with our USDA Animal Plant Inspection Service veterinarians and look for facilities that meet USDA standards. Then we inquire within the State Department of Natural Resources for the appropriate local permits within the source facility's home state. We don't have direct contact with the facility until these two agency criteria are met. Once this has been determined, we contact the facility to establish a formal request for pups. If a facility has several requests from such as zoos or other exhibits, we will be placed on a priority list at that facility based on when we made the initial contact. We're generally not privy to the other requests that may be told, but may be told of our standing in the priority list. Facilities may also transfer pups between other facilities for genetic diversity reasoning, and we may acquire a pup that was not whelped at the source facility. USDA transfer permits are necessary for this transfer between facilities, but our transfer permit requirements would only be with the source facility. This is the situation that occurred with the 2012 litter. The two pups came from different sources. The female pup, nicknamed Peanut, came from a litter of 9 pups, and two of the litter mates were transferred to our source facility. The male pup, nicknamed Bolt, was born at the source facility, and we were told that there were about 5 in that litter. The ages of whelping had to be clarified. Originally, we thought Peanut was born on April 2nd, and that we were dealing with a 12-day-old pup when we acquired her. After some follow-up contact, we identified the actual whelping date of March 25th with a transfer to the source facility on April 6th. The male pup was born at the source facility sometime around March 17th. Captive wolves are not managed like a dog pup, where they may whelp in the presence of humans. In captivity, the pups may be born in wolf-made or artificial dens, and while the absence of a female may occur for several days prior to whelping as she prepares for birth. Typically, captive facilities may not investigate the den during the first few days to avoid disturbances that might stress the female and increase the risk for pup mortality. Hence, while there may be an estimate on a whelping date, it's our understanding that Peanut's whelping was observed and that the date can be confirmed as March 25th. When pups are raised at the center, we monitor everything on a daily basis and make a comparative analysis chart to previous pups. We know everything that goes into the pups and everything that comes out. We monitor food, formula, vitamins, nutritional supplements, urinations, defecations. We are monitoring 24 hours a day. We use Grizzer, Maya, and Nisa's growth charts for comparison because we assume at least Bolts may have some genetic similarities being whelped at the same source. When the pups arrived, Peanut weighed about 3 pounds, which was in line for weight for a 12-day-old pup. But when we found out that she was closer to 20 days of age, this was about 1.5 pounds underweight from Maya and Nisa's charts. Bolts was 5.4 pounds when he got him, which in comparison to Grizzer, he was 2 pounds underweight. The difference for us with this litter compared to all the other pups we've raised since 1989 is that we didn't acquire them in the neonate period. The neonate period is described as that period from birth to eye opening. All of our other pups since 1989 were acquired sometime between 8 and 13 days of age. This allows for maximum nutrition, be able to transition right from the mother to Espalac formula, and to make sure that we have the highest nutritional content in these pups while we raise them. Wolf care staff started noticing some ability issues with Peanut shortly after we acquired her on April 13th. Again, we thought she was in the late neonate period. We expect 12-day-old pups to be a bit unstable, and we're careful to keep Bolts from getting too active with her. By early May, we didn't see nearly the improvement in coordination that we would have expected, and we were wondering if it was a muscle development problem due to the lack of outdoor time. With the early spring whelping, the pups were developing, but the weather wasn't conducive to outdoor activity, especially for Peanut, who was hypothermic a lot. On a normal whelping period of late April, their development would be in line with warmer days of June, not the cooler spring day associated with early May. At this point, my efforts need to be focused on her current situation and how we best help her improve her physical condition. We started to bring the pups into the auditorium for some exercise. We have carpeted risers and the pups can climb the steps, which helps their coordination tremendously. We also like to give the pups a positive experience in the auditorium, as they'll be doing public programs, which started on Memorial Day weekend, and we want them to willingly go into the auditorium. Their first few sessions, we just had bolts on the steps, and his mobility and agility improved dramatically. On Friday, May 11th, we allowed Peanut to walk on the risers, and while walking along, she rolled off a 10-inch riser. It's not unusual for pups to roll, jump, run into things, grab, wrestle, and roughhouse with each other. In our experience with other pups, they get up and try it again. This was not an interaction with bolts. This was just Peanut walking along and rolling. It was like slow motion. After she rolled, she sat there. No whine, no yelp. She looked up and bolts came over and greeted. And she got up and walked, but she wouldn't weight bear on her back right leg. We took her to the Ely Vet Clinic for exams, and they couldn't find anything on palpation, nor did the pup show much of a pain response. She was prescribed pain and anti-inflammatory medication follow-up visits over the weekend and was not happy with her progress. On Monday morning, x-rays were taken, and they discovered that what appeared to be a fracture in the femur, but more concerning was a lack of development in the bone structure. The Ely Vets began the process for a formal consultation with the University of Minnesota Veterinary Medical Center and sent them the x-rays that they took in Ely. It took a few days to get an appointment scheduled with the U, but we traveled to St. Paul on May 16th for additional x-rays with the hopes of having surgical repair on Peanut's leg. They were uncertain if they could help her after looking at the first set of x-rays, but were willing to try. Rather than stress her by taking x-rays, then deciding if surgery was an option, they anesthetized her, did x-rays, determined that the location of the break could have a plate, and they prepped and started the surgery. I received a call during surgery with the news that her bones were very translucent, almost paper thin, and they were concerned that the plate wouldn't hold. They asked me if I wanted to continue, and I felt like we had to try. So I authorized the surgery with the understanding that this might not be repairable. It was a tough call, but in the back of my mind, I know wolves have incredible resilience, and this pup had an incredible spirit and attitude. Attitude plays a large part in healing, and even though it might not be able to overcome such a significant bone density issue, like I said, we had to try something. Normally, with a plate correction for a femoral fracture, exercise restriction and confinement are recommended. After our arrival back in Ely after the surgery, we created a small area within the main pup enclosure that allowed Peanut to have some restricted mobility but still have face-to-face contact with bolts. And as a reminder, metal implants that are used for surgery are designed to be long-term in place, but if there is any kind of issue with the implant or months or even years later, follow-up surgery may be necessary. And obviously, prior to surgery, we discussed the risks and the bone density issue that obviously had an influence on this fracture. And this condition of bone density makes us very, very keen on any activity that a normal pup would do that might put stress on a weakened condition. So since the return back to Ely and since the recovery and the surgery, we've been working with a nutritionist at the Maine University. And initially, we started with some over-the-counter supplements, and we just didn't feel that that was really meeting our needs. And so through a consult, the University of Minnesota did design a specialized diet for Peanut, and that's initially what she's been fed. At the time of surgery, blood was drawn to be able to identify, first of all, a candidacy for surgery and her health and condition, and second of all, two tests to try to see or identify if this was a congenital underlying pathology that led to this bone density problem, or if it could be addressed with nutritional supplements. The first is a PTH, or parathyroid hormone level. Second is an active vitamin D test to be able to, again, determine, you know, if there is a course of action that could be taken to help recover this pup. We referenced earlier the ionized calcium results, which were about 1.8 with a dog range about 1.25 to 1.45. The PTH, or a parathyroid hormone level test, actually came back within normal range as well, with a domestic dog rate of 0.5 to 5.8. Peanut's PTH value was 2.1, so that was well within the range of normal dog. And the one thing that did come back from the test results that was significantly low was hydroxide vitamin D, and normal dog range is between 60 and 215. And Peanut's condition of vitamin D level was at 34. So that was well below the normal range. And so vitamin D is important, obviously, to utilize calcium and draw calcium into the bone. So with a vitamin D deficiency, even if she had calcium in her body, she wasn't able to draw it or utilize it. So again, this gave us a little bit of hope in that this was not a may not be a metabolic condition, maybe something that we can solve nutritionally. And again, whether, she's, getting resources and just not using them is still a question. But at this point, we had the opportunity to be able to maximize vitamin D in her diet. And if you've been following the logs at all, you may recall that initially there was some concern with lack of sunlight for not being outdoors and even being, we even used a full spectrum light on her anytime she was in the lab. But a later consult with a nutritionalist specialist informed us that our initial research on vitamin D deficiencies from lack of sunlight was not accurate. Neither dogs nor cats have the ability to synthesize vitamin D in the skin with UV light like people do, or amphibians or birds can. So we took the light out of the lab, but continue to give the pups some outdoor time as sun and warm weather has arrived, and we are getting some good outdoor activity. There was some initial discussion with the doctors that if the pups had a too high of a meat content diet, which is high in phosphorus, that it may have affected the calcium available to the produced bone. We are cognitive in all of our nutritional work with wolves of the phosphorus-calcium ratio and the importance of make sure that every gram of phosphorus that they're feeding, and we're feeding at least an equal amount of calcium. Again, a 1-to-1 ratio is better, so that calcium isn't continually mobilized from the bone due to the high phosphorus rate. So we're cognitive right now of feeding the ratio of meat to Espalac formula and trying to keep a very good balance with that production or with that diet. Again, there might have been, some issues that we don't know about prior to their arrival, but from the time that they arrived with us on April 13th, we've been very cognitive to balance that Espalac formula to meat ratio. The reality is, like I said, we don't know the cause, and the good news is that the test results seem to reflect fairly normal calcium metabolism. So again, if we continue to add vitamin D sources, whether they can be commercial dog food, liver, and now the supplement that's designed by the University of Minnesota, we hope that we can overcome what issues did occur for this pup early on in her life. The challenge is that Peanut, and now known as Luna, doesn't think much of commercial dog food. She doesn't think much of adding liver to her diet. She is very pretty finicky eater, and even the smell of the vitamins and the food supplement are causing her a little bit of issues. So at this point, what we're doing is taking the powdered supplement and putting it with Espalac formula, waiting till she's in a little bit of a REM sleep, and then syringe feeding her that supplement. And that goes on, again, three times throughout a 24-hour period. So trying to maximize those nutrients in her body, as well as giving her preferred food, which is venison and beaver, as well as we're trying to, again, continue to get liver in her because it is high in vitamin D. Her preference is for pureed liver ice cubes. Also looking at trying to make some liver jerky and see if that might not be a good way for her to get a liver consumption. On average, right now she's eating about 12 to 16 ounces of meat a day with another, again, 10 to 15 ounces of formula within a 24-hour period. And we will continue to consume Espalac for as long as we need it. And again, Espalac formula is something we've used successfully in every litter since we've started raising wolves here at the center in 1989. So again, as we said, the next step, the follow-up x-rays, which will be next week. Those will be 4 weeks post-surgery. What we're looking for in these x-rays, it should reveal again if we're making some headway on nutritionally trying to increase that bone density. We'll be able to hopefully see how that plate is healing, if it's still kind of in place, if there's any indication that the bone is fusing with that plate, and making sure that, again, if we have a positive review, then we'll take a look at where she's at and see if we can increase her mobility a little bit so we can start developing a little bit more muscle. If anyone's been in a situation where you've been confined for a period of time. You know, atrophy in the muscles is something that does occur. So we've been giving her short bouts of activity with programs. Certainly her activity outside has increased her mobility and increased her muscle strength. But once we get the go-ahead after this next set of x-rays, if we get the go-ahead that she is healing, and then we will look at expanding some exercise time for her. Physically, she's very active. As a matter of fact, our biggest challenge is trying to keep her within the framework or within the specifications of limited activity. She wants to run. She wants to jump. She wants to wrestle. She wants to do pup things. She's active, and the more active, like I say, than we want. And we, again, will do know from previous experience that attitude has a significant impact on healing. And until we get a better idea of healing again, we don't know a lot about her future. A lot of people are asking, you know, will she join the exhibit pack, or, you know, will she have some other arrangement, maybe living with Grizz, or maybe, you know, some other kind of arrangement on site. There's a lot of things that have to happen before we have any determination of what her life as an adult is going to look like. Our goal is that she joins the exhibit pack, and maybe not at the same time as Bolt's. Maybe hers might be delayed a little bit if she needs to catch up. Currently, she's tracking on weight. She's gaining weight, but she's not gaining nearly as much as Bolt's. Bolt's is gaining maybe a half a pound on average day. She's gaining maybe between 1 to 3/10 a pound a day. And again, her body is healing, so it's understandable that she's not putting on growth because she has so much going on in her body. But we do need to get some significant weight gain in her before we make any decisions about where she's going to reside as far as pack introductions. And secondly, we need to get a clear idea that her bone density has improved dramatically before she joins adult wolves. So there's a lot of people that are wondering, why didn't we just get a different pup, or why are we going to such efforts for a pup that may not be on the main display in the exhibit pack? And our response is that, you know, she's our responsibility. We adopted her into the Wolf Care program, and we are certainly not giving up on her. Her attitude, again, is very good, and this is not a sickly pup that's injured. This is a pup that's got some issues, but clearly she's got some dominance. She's got some very strong predatory drive. As a matter of fact, she's getting a little bit too dominant because we protect her so much from Bolts that every time she gets a chance to go after Bolts, she tries to pin them. So she's a feisty little pup. And even if she's not in the exhibit pack, again, we know that there will be people who are following her well-being on YouTube and on the Wolf Vlogs, and the Wolf Care staff will do all they can to meet her needs and to provide her with a good quality of life. So that's the extent of what we know at this time. We will probably post updates after that x-ray next week on the Wolf Vlogs. Probably will not do another podcast till after the introduction. Again, it's apologize for this taking so long to get out, but as you can imagine, there's a lot of things that go on in the day-to-day care of pups, including follow-up on nutrition, on diet, on, you know, just the basic day-to-day things to make necessary that she gets all that she needs during this critical healing process. So thanks for your support, and thanks for your questions, and we will, again, always try to keep you informed. You know, the timeliness of it will also always be dependent upon what the wolves' needs are. So thanks for listening.